Hello and welcome back to Millennial 8. I think this is the ninth night. And hold on, let me just check that. Yes, it is. And in 2 hours, four streams as usual. In 2 hours, I will have the Fergan and then Pessimistic Idealism and then Paranormies. But first, it is Cult Games. And am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are pronouncing it correctly. A lot of people say KVLT games, and I mean, that's fine too, but it's intended to be pronounced cult.
Okay. Well, I should introduce you.
Like in black metal, you know, true cult.
Yes, yes, I thought so. I should introduce you correctly. This is Roland from Cult Games. So, Roland, welcome to Millennial.
Thanks for having me.
Would you like to introduce Cult Games to people just so that they know what it is and... then we'll talk more in depth about the games.
Yes, so Cult Games is an independent game development studio. We have released one game. We are currently working on its sequel, and it was founded by me, mostly because I just saw like a need for like some kind of non-conform or anti-establishment or whatever you want to call it, video games, because video games, just like any other medium, has been infiltrated and subverted by leftists and filled with their agendas and so on. And I just think like it's important to fight back against that whichever way you can. It just so happened that I could make video games. I understand that like some people might be critical towards the concept of video games, especially on the right, but this was my field of expertise, you could say. So that's where I decided to become active. I was also a political activist at the time. I was politically active in Generation Identity for some years. I eventually stopped with the street level activism, mostly because of age reasons. I have a family now, I'm a father. So yeah, I basically decided to combine these two things, and now the video game development is my activism, I guess you could say that in a way. So that's the history, how it came to be.
It's a very interesting story. I mean, I don't play video games myself. I did
fair enough.
when I was much younger, but it was something that I just sort of naturally left behind. I don't really know why, but other people clearly didn't, and it becomes it's a thing that people are still into their 20s and 30s and 40s, and I think it's like everything else, it's fine in moderation, right? I'm not going to say you should never play video games, because that's clearly silly. Video games themselves, yeah. It's a huge thing. I mean, it's not like, and you were talking about the mainstream industry is infiltrated by leftists, of course, but I think it's worth pointing out how massive a thing video gaming is today, because a lot of people, including myself, actually, didn't know and don't know that it's not like in the 90s or the 80s when it was a group of maybe 10 programmers would make a game. Nowadays it's massive. So yeah. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, video games are massive. They generate more profit than the Hollywood or the movie industry, pretty much. Every Zoomer plays video games, and it's like it has just become part of the culture. The types of video games that are being produced, like the big AAA productions, they have teams of like sometimes hundreds of people, budgets of many hundreds of millions of dollars. They can absolutely compete with movies and more so. And I personally don't play these games. Like I have completely like checked out of the mainstream out of mainstream gaming for many years. And I obviously cannot hope to compete with these things, but like small indie games developed by small, like sometimes single developers or small teams, they have been quite successful and can still kind of like break through, like back in the 80s or in the 90s, obviously it's not going to be this big of an audience, but they can reach many people and they can be very successful. So this is kind of like where I'm trying to get into, because I still think, I mean, basically you can imagine like almost every computer game that comes out is like a Marvel movie. You know, I mean, they're shit, they're stupid, they're idiotic Bugman stuff. But that doesn't mean that the medium itself isn't actually very fascinating. I mean, it's an interactive medium where you can combine music, visual arts, storytelling. Why should that not be interesting? You know, what is inherently bad about this medium? I find it very fascinating, and I think you can do great things with it. There are games, in my opinion, that are art. I don't know. Personally, I'm a big fan, for instance, of Silent Hill, which is basically like a kind of psychological horror game that concerns itself with like facing your own guilt and fears and such things. You know, like you can concern yourself with these themes in video games. Like it doesn't always just have to be like, I don't know, gay tranny space marines shooting aliens or something.
yeah, of course. I suppose a question here is that the interaction of themes and story plot line, because obviously a film has a plot line, beginning, middle, and end, and the theme is and that dictates the handling of the theme. Whereas with a video game, it's more open ended, or at least nowadays they are. What would you say about that? And how have you handled that in cult games?
That's actually a very that's actually a topic that people have been talking a lot about, and where there is like even like academic debate and all that. Like, does the interactivity of video games, like, does it give you more opportunities, or does it actually destroy the ability of the author to create a proper story because you constantly have the player interfering with whatever you intended? I personally think that video games, like, they will never replace movies. There has always been this idea like video games are going to be the new movies. I think that's stupid. Video games can do certain things, and they can do them very well if it's done well. And movies can do other things very well. And I don't think it's like, you know, like one or the other. I mean, so far, like in our first game, Heimat Defender, I mean, I made it alone pretty much. Retro Rebel, a synthwave artist, has made the soundtrack. But apart from that, I made it alone. So it's a simple game. It's a platformer game that is like inspired by the classic Super Mario, Mega Man type games. So I there isn't that much in terms of like unconventional storytelling or so on. But it does have a narrative, and I mean it's humorous. It gets across a lot of its message actually with humor, and that's what people constantly keep telling me, that they find it so funny and that they like the graphics absolutely. And all that, because they made them laugh. Yeah. And I think this is something you can do really well with video games, actually, humor. That's like a very, because like the player does stuff himself, and then like the game reacts to it, and it's I don't know, it's like, I think it's a great tool for humor, basically. So that's definitely one of the that's a thing I try to use. It's a very linear game. Like, there is no branching storyline or something like that. That's something I would like to explore maybe in further titles. But
I suppose that it's an opportune time to have some screenshots from the game. That Lichtmas, who was on Millennial last night, sent me these screenshots at the time. When Heimat Defender came out, and here's one of them. This is a depiction of Lichtmas.
I mean, I'm very proud of this, because it's actually really difficult to like draw a person with so few pixels,
yeah,
and make him instantly recognizable. And I mean, I don't want to like pat myself on the shoulders too much, but I think I managed to do that here.
Yes, I think you did. I really think you did. And he said that himself, actually, that he was impressed by that very thing, that it's him, but in so few pixels.
No idea how I even did that, to be honest. Like, it's one of these things that I probably could never repeat. It just sort of worked. I don't know.
Yes, I know the kind of thing. You think, how did I do that?
I'm not sure I could do that again. I don't know. just worked, yeah.
Let's talk about, I just wanted to show those as examples of the thing, but let's talk about HIMAP Defender, because obviously there's a lot to be said about this matter, about this topic. How did you get the idea for, we'll start at the obvious thing. How did you get the idea for HIMAP Defender? You obviously had the idea that you could do a video game company, that could be a form of getting the message out and entertaining people. So then what happened? What led towards HIMAP Defender?
Actually, now that you phrase it like that, I mean, I think I wasn't completely correct in how I told it, because I told it a little bit backwards, because actually the idea of making HIMAP Defender and the inspiration for that was first, and only when I was already in the process of making it, I had this idea of making a proper company and making more games and trying to get people to join me and so on. The idea of HIMAP Defender, it was really like I was doing like some really basic pixel art stuff just because I thought it was fun. It was like a bit of a hobby, and I posted it on Instagram sometimes. And people knew that I was like this nerdy guy who is into game development and so on. And so at one point, another political activist from Germany, from our circles, Alex Malenki, kind of approached me, and because he saw my pixel art that I posted on, and he was like, "Hey, do you want to draw like a little pixel avatar for me to use in my social media profiles?" And I was like, "Okay, yeah, sure, why not?" And so I drew it for him, and then I said, like half jokingly, like, I could already, like, when I'm already drawing like you as a pixel avatar, I might as well just make a game with you. And then he was like, "Yeah, why not?" And I was also like, "Yeah, why not?" And so, and then I started, and there is this in Germany, there is like a sort of a fundraising, or like a right wing fundraising organization that supports meta political projects. And they we approached them, and they helped us financially. They financed the whole thing. And yeah, suddenly I was finding myself making a game with like all these characters, and one thing led to another. It's like, it's not like I had like an epiphany and there was the idea. So things led relatively organically to each other. It was like I really liked the whole like synthwave cyberpunk style. Obviously, I always loved cyberpunk. When I was younger, I used to play Shadowrun and all that stuff. And System Shock is one of my favorite games, if people know it. So yeah, I like the cyberpunk style. Synthwave was really like en vogue at the time. I knew Retro Rebel, who made synthwave music, so we decided to have it in this like dystopian cyberpunk future, and we just take like the actual people from real life and put them in this scenario, and instead of like having just like some random mega corporation owning everything, we make the mega corporation the global homo corporation, and it's like, you know, it's putting out all this propaganda and turning people into NPCs, and we just took like some memes that were floating around at the time. And yeah, it really came together pretty naturally. I hardly had to like think about this stuff, basically. Yeah,
I'm just putting up screenshots from it, and this was what really delighted me at the time, that it integrated real people like Martin Selner, Lichtmess, Bjorn Hawk, but also it integrated these memes like that one there, the guy for the Star Wars advert, or no, what you would call that.
He was crying when he saw like the new Star Wars trailer, I remember. Yeah. I mean, I still don't know if that was satire or if this guy was for real. I'm not sure.
That's an eternal question, really, isn't it? But also that it integrated the memes, like the NPCs and Global Homo. I think it was absolutely hilarious. I remember laughing and laughing when I saw these things. And there's Paws and the Hammer and Sickle. And there is one of the that I I'm looking for one of the Global Homo Corporation, but it's only, there's not a JPEG, and StreamYard can only handle JPEGs. So okay. Unfortunately, I can't show people that, unfortunately. But yeah, it's just so funny and so inventive. So this is something that I got very excited about when I saw this.
I have a real passion for all these games that I grew up with, all these old school retro games, as you would call them these days. It's a special aesthetic, and these games just kind of fueled my imagination when I was a kid. I mean, on some level, playing too many video games, sitting in front of the TV for too much can like stifle your creativity and your fantasy, and it makes children probably dull or something. But in my case, I don't know. It's just like I was like dreaming about all these fantasy worlds and so on. And I don't know. I just felt the urge to create something like that myself. And I always wanted to make video games because I really wanted to like create something myself and not just consume it. I think like I tried to infuse this game with this what I felt when I was a little kid, basically, and when I played these games.
It definitely has a Sega feel to it, which is familiar to me. I mean,
I was a Sega kid. I didn't have a Super Nintendo. I had a Sega Mega Drive.
The Mega Drive was better. Well, okay. I had the NES. Then we got the Mega Drive. And I also had a Sega Game Gear.
I also had that. Yeah.
Which was great fun. That was Sega's rival to the Game Boy. And it was a color screen, unlike the Game Boy, which was monochrome.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't really carry it anyway because the batteries lasted for like half an hour or so.
We just had it plugged in, which kind of defeated the purpose of it being handheld, but still it was cute, and the graphics were very cute, definitely sort of worked their way into my subconscious, and I still love them now. I have a great nostalgia for them. Some people would probably ask the question, is this kind of graphics, is it easier to program for than 3D?
Yes, the short answer is yes. And I mean, one of the reasons I drew all the graphics for the first game myself, and one of the reasons why I chose this particular style, was just because it's what I could do. I can't do 3D modeling. I have no experience at all with that. And I'm not really good at graphic design, but I sort of could teach myself pixel art. I mean, pixel art is its own science, and it can get really sophisticated. I'm not saying pixel art is automatically easy or something. Like, people are doing incredible stuff with pixel art, but it's comparatively to other techniques, comparatively easy to create something that looks decent. And so it was a bit of a pragmatic decision also, yeah.
Yeah, but it also fed into the nostalgia thing.
And absolutely.
You have a game that looks very well.
And I think it helped me.
Sorry,
it gave it a distinctive look, and I also think it allowed me to tap into the nostalgic feelings probably of all the other people who had, like, it's a generational thing. People of a certain age group will just get it when they see that stuff. People of a younger age group won't get it. Like, I recently, for instance, let a young Zoomer test play our new game, and he was just like, what is this? This looks like shit, you know?
That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. You know, you'd think that they would get into the simplicity of it. And
I mean, there are. I don't want to say all Zoomer are like this, but this was one reaction I got. So I guess that's also a thing.
Nazalt.
Yeah, of course. Not all Zoomers.
So what is the, just to introduce people to High Mat Defender, what is the storyline, or what is the purpose? What's the goal in the game?
So you are playing the role of four people that exist in real life. Martin Selner, political activist of Generation Identity, Alex Malenki, also an activist, Götz Kubitschek, who is he was named the Dark Knight in this game, but it's obviously him, who is a German he owns a right-wing publishing house in Germany and is a very famous figure in our circles. And Otto Illner, who is probably not very well known outside of Germany, but he's a bit of a he's a very interesting person. He's a philosopher. He's like incredibly smart, but at the same time, he makes these weird fake outdoor survival videos where he does pretend to be like a survival expert, but he just talks about completely weird shit. It's a really strange combination. Very funny, very interesting guy. So I had to put him in the game. Otto Illner is his name. Yeah. So you play these four characters and they are transported for reasons that have never really been explained into this future. And they have to fight the evil global homo corporation. They lead the resistance against the corporation that wants to turn everyone into an NPC. And and that's the basic premise. And then you fight through these levels. You fight through levels that are vaguely modeled after real locations. Like, for instance, this level taking place in a city that is like Halle Leipzig in Germany, that is known for like having a big Antifa presence. So you fight these Antifas there, and then you go into the NPC factory where all these like brainwashed people are being created. You fight boss enemies that may or may not be resembling real existing people, like Angela Merkel and such.
I have a screenshot of that, although this isn't the one that I remember seeing at the time. But there it is. It's the cyborg Merkel.
Yes, that's maybe she's called the manager, because she's like this creature of complete like bureaucracy. Like she has lost all humanity and it's just about like managing the situation, like the whole system. You know, like she doesn't actually. She's like a computer, basically. That's why I made these thingies in the background, these green and gray. What you see behind her head, that's a bit of a nod to Showdown and System Shock 2, for those who know the games. So that's that.
Very good, very good. It's hilarious. But one thing I did want to ask you about is that I believe that the word Heimat is... not exactly verboten in Germany, but it's unfashionable. I mean, I know is it as bad as the word folk or not?
No, not really. Actually, in fact, Heimat is a word that is kind of shunned, but at the same time, most people still have a vaguely positive connotation to it. So you always have this phenomenon then when it's time for election, you get left-wing politicians that somehow try to like, co-opt the word Heimat for themselves, and then they do stuff like take black people and put them in Lederhosen or that kind of stuff, you know what I mean, like to reappropriate it and stuff, because people still kind of associate at the end of the day, most people, obviously not hardcore leftists and so on, but your average Joe associates something vaguely positive with Heimat, so that's always strange.
Yeah, I should have asked you at the start. Obviously, it's a German word. Could you describe? And German is, it's like, everyone says this. It's a cliche, but there are these things. German has a lot of words that don't translate directly into English. There are words that have a lot packed into them. And I think Heimat, well, would you explain for English speakers what Heimat means?
Yeah, I mean, Heimat is probably, it is one of these words. It can roughly be translated with homeland, but it's not completely the same, because Heimat is it contains, as you said, like it has a lot packed into it. Like it's like the place where you are, where you just can be yourself and among people who are yourself. Where you, there is this saying like Heimat is where you don't have to explain yourself. It's a feeling of, it's like where you are truly at home, or where you are truly, where you belong. It's where you belong. Yeah. You know? That's the Heimat.
There is no word for that in English. Which is...
I think not like a one-to-one translation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So how did it go with the release of HiMAT Defender? And was it, did you get trouble for it? Was it controversial or how did that go?
I mean, as I said, it's a simple game, as also somebody in the comments pointed out, that it's very niche and we are, it was a one man project. It was a simple platform. I didn't actually expect it to like be extremely, to make big waves. But when we announced the whole thing, like there was like a slew of articles about this evil neo-Nazi game coming out, and I could sense that like that we struck a nerve, and that like the leftist mainstream did not expect that, because basically right wingers are these dumb idiots that can't do such things, basically, like programming and so on. That's highbrow. They don't do that, you know.
And they wouldn't even think to do that because they're right. Too stupid. They're too unimaginative. They're dull.
Exactly. They are boring. Yeah. They just want to drink beer and hate on brown people, and you know, with their like check boots. I don't even know what kind of whatever. They felt it was inappropriate that somebody would do such a thing. So there were these articles. There was a big media campaign. We wanted to release it on Steam. Steam is like the number one gaming distribution platform. If you release a game, you basically have to put it on Steam. It's kind of like the Apple Store or something. You know, it's like a monopoly. So we did want to put it on Steam. It was in the review process. There was this big shitstorm coming from the media. But Steam was still like, yeah, whatever. The review process was going on. Then eventually we got a message that we should give the game an H rating due to its content. Okay? I mean, the game is completely free pretty much of violence. There is no blood in it or anything. Okay, it has political content, so whatever. So we were, okay, let's get an H rating, blah, blah, blah. But then a few days later, we just got our account deleted and the game was taken out of Steam, and you know, we just got banned. We got kicked off of Steam. And later on, it basically was confirmed that it was essentially state intervention. It was essentially the government, basically, and also the police that got involved into the whole thing and made sure to shut this stuff down. Yeah? And why I say the police is because, as you said, it got kicked off of Steam, and then a bit later, the game got put on the so-called, it didn't really fully get banned in Germany, but it got on the so-called Index of Youth Endangering Media.
And my God.
And we got a 36 page long document with the with the reasoning why it has to be put on that index. And from that, it became clear that this whole process was started by the BKA, the Bundeskriminalamt, which is essentially the police. So the police basically investigated us, so to say, and then kicked off this whole process for like putting the game on this index. And if a game or any kind of media, music, whatever, movie is on that index, it means you are not allowed to advertise for it, which in practice means you are not allowed to say its name in public. If in Germany you have a Telegram channel or whatever and you post the words Heimat Defender, you can get a fine. Like basically saying the name is illegal, so to say, because it counts as advertising. And you are not allowed to make the game accessible to minors. And that's the case in Germany with that game. And it's hilarious because this game is completely harmless. Like there is no violence in it. Usually extremely violent movies or games get put on that index. And there are games on Steam on the platform. Like there is a game called Hatred, which is a literal mass murderer simulator where you like the super edgy guy with like a long black trench coat and he goes out with his assault rifle and you're just supposed to shoot as many civilians as possible. And then you get points for that. And this game is still on Steam. Like that's okay. But our game got kicked off. Yeah.
And of course, I wonder about the politically opposite game. Like, I wonder if the left wanted to do a game that encouraged, you know, kids to explore the possibility that they're transgender or something like that. I'm sure that would get through.
Obviously. There is a game on Steam that is called Tonight We Riot, which is a literal like communist world revolution simulator where you are taking over and you're destroying the bourgeoisie and whatnot. I mean, whatever, that's fine. I think it's not even a problem that it's on Steam, but obviously that's a big... I mean, it's almost become a cliche to point out double standards.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, I know.
We know. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And I feel bad saying it. Like, imagine if the roles were
reversed. Imagine if the roles were reversed, right?
But it's true, of course, it keeps being annoying. It keeps being amazing that just how unlevel the playing field is.
It is sometimes a bit frustrating. It's true. I mean, of course, I would love to just be able to release on Steam and just do game development like everyone else. And then I see it's kind of even like a money-making scheme. Okay, you're like a small studio and you just make some shit game, but then you make it about like refugees or, yeah, some transgender stuff and so on. And then you will get money from the state. You will get grants and stuff. And it's basically easy money, you know, you just pump out that game, you know, nobody actually cares, nobody plays that stuff. But yeah, it's like an easy money making scheme. Yeah.
So it's the direct opposite of what
yes.
has happened with you. If you push left wing ideas and the things that would damage or radically change the Heimat, then the state will help you to do that.
Yes.
If you talk about defending the Heimat, the state will... It's so perverse. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's this phenomenon that basically those who are supposed to represent us or our elites are essentially acting hostile towards us,
yeah,
towards
I mean,
people.
And of course, I mean, that tells you, okay, so it's globalism, you know, that the individual nations are no longer things to be protected. They're no longer things in and of themselves, according to those the powers that be. It's really just remarkable. Okay, so I guess, is there anything else that you would want people to know about Heimat Defender, like where they could get it, what they need in order to play it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we had to take down the original website, heimatdefender.de, because it was registered in Germany and the people hosting it, who were those people who funded the game, yeah, they basically couldn't do it anymore because the URL was illegal, basically, in Germany, heimatdefender.de. So they took it down. Thankfully, I'm Austrian, and I don't care like here about this whole index thing because we don't have that here in Austria. By the way, it has always been a phenomenon that in Austria you could get all the cool games in their original versions with the blood and everything. Or the I don't know, like Doom. I guess everybody knows Doom. That was put on the index and you couldn't get it in Germany. And, you know, like the people living on the border always went over to Austria to get all the good games. So, yeah, it's kind of funny that now my game is on that index. You know, I remember as a kid, it was like, oh, Doom is on the index. Anyway, we are hosting it now on a different site, which is not in Germany, hosted in Germany. And you can, namely ours, our the website of our company, cultgames.com, kvltgames.com. And there you can download it. There you can download Heimat Defender Rebellion for free. We gave it away for free. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, excellent. All right, and I'll add that link to the description. So then... That brings us to the current game, the one that you're currently working on, which is called The Great Rebellion. What would you say about that? And is it a continuation of Heimat Defender, or is it a different world altogether, or what?
Yeah, this game has made quite the transformation in its development. It started out as me alone, making a pretty direct sequel to Heimat Defender Rebellion. But I soon found that a bit boring because I just don't want to do the same thing twice. And other people came to join the project. And they brought in their skills and their ideas. And we talked about the concept of the game. And I also had like a bit of a different interest in the types of game I was playing myself at the time. So I didn't really want to do a platformer again. And so the game evolved over time, and what it is essentially is, let's say, a spiritual successor of the first game. It takes place in roughly the same game world. There is still the evil global homo corporation. It still has the cyberpunk aesthetics. There will be, again, a synthwave soundtrack by Retro Rebel. But the gameplay will be quite different. It will be decidedly more action-oriented, and it will be a so-called roguelike. That means that's a type of games where, like, the worlds are always randomly generated. And every time you play it, you play different levels and you find different items and so on. So they have, like, a higher replayability value. I really like those types of games. Games like Enter the Gungeon. Oh, yeah,
There's the logo. I've got to say that's something that always annoys me about the old Sega games, because you come to know them so well. You know the levels inside and out. And I always wished that there was some sort of algorithm, some sort of program that would just generate new layouts, you know, a new layout engine generator or whatever. It's a shame that that never really happened. And those old games remain, frozen, unevolving. It's a real shame, because they're very fun, but once you know the levels, it's less
it's tricky, because of course if you handcraft the levels and they're always the same, then you can of course do like very sophisticated things, and very like you can do like really precise level design and so on, and that's a lot more difficult if you have the levels randomly generated by an algorithm to make sure that you always end up with interesting levels. What we did basically is a bit of a compromise. The levels are not completely randomly generated. They are basically taken from there is a pool of possible rooms, and they are handcrafted. And then they are like randomly stuck together. Like the algorithm takes a bunch of these rooms out and then puts them together and then distributes randomly like weapons and other items in there and enemies. So if you play a lot, you will recognize some stuff that you have probably seen before, but it's still different every time. Because I really love that whole like concept just like more replayability. Every time you start the game, it's like, what will I find this time? You know, how will the world look this time? So
that's something that really appeals to me. It's something that I try to do from about 2018 onwards. I tried to, with Millennial Woes, I started writing software to generate the graphics and the intros.
Oh, so you're also a programmer, like you also.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. It ended up being so. It was such a big thing, you know, and it did generate the intro freshly every time with little random variations, but it was so difficult to do. You know, it meant that every video I made, I had to do this, and it was a lot of work. But it did work. It did work. It just sort of took out the spontaneity. I love the idea of, and I did it this year with Millennial as well, where every episode has this overlay graphic, but it's different every time. It's slightly different in many, like the backgrounds of the trees and the flaming around the lettering. All of that is unique for each episode. And so I love this idea too, that just when you said that about building in randomness so that it's slightly different every time. It's something that really appeals to me.
It's really once you get into this whole concept. Now I almost find traditional level design a bit boring. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, you do it once and then it's always the same. That's almost like once you get hooked on this whole random algorithmic or procedural level design or level generation, then you basically don't want to go back. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's a matter of writing, like once you've written the algorithm that does it, you know, and then, okay, so then you can press play on that algorithm 100 times and you're going to get 100 different results
for
some random thing. Then, why wouldn't you do it that way?
Of course, there are just like some handcrafted things in the first game.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't completely replicate. So like there is a little bit of a trade-off.
Oh, but of course. I think things it's absolutely you can worth randomize. It.
Yeah. So that's the basic idea. And in this game, there will be like you can collect money and buy weapons. There's going to be like a black market, a guy who is also like secretly helping you and you can like talk to him, and so we want to like also have like lots of character interaction. You can like find characters in the levels that are also randomly distributed, that are maybe let's say vaguely inspired also by real life persons. There is a character that's like a blonde bodybuilder who's called the Golden Man, and he will give you tips about how to do your I don't know, your squats better or such things. Yeah, so you can find these characters, and but we don't have like real life people in this game anymore, because we thought, I mean, it was kind of like the hook for the first game, but it's in the end, I personally think it gets a bit gimmicky if you do that too much. And we kind of want to tell a story and build like a game world. And I think it just works better. In this game, the protagonist is just kind of like a bit of an average Joe in that world, in this dystopian world. But one day he decides he has enough, and he kind of like rips out like the chip from his head that controls him. And he decides to fight back, you know, and then he gets into trouble because of that, and he gets rescued by people from the resistance, and that's how the game starts, basically. So there won't be real-life characters. There will be characters that will be, like, inspired. There will be references for those in the know. They will recognize it, but yeah. So it's a different type of game. It's like different type of gameplay, which just appeals more to me. I think like as a game developer, you should always make games that you also want to play yourself. And this is the type of game I want to play myself. Like, yeah.
All right.
And it is a lot more complex than the first game. We are like six people now. So I actually have to count. We are a bunch of people now. We are already developing it a bit longer than we originally planned, and it's going to take a bit of time, but I think it's worth it. It's not going to be like a Duke Nukem forever, don't worry. But we will finish it, but it's going to be a bit more complex than the first game.
Yeah, because, presumably you're learning as you go. I mean, presumably this is technical challenges that you're having to work out, and you don't have the resources that... some huge company has.
Yeah, it's like I would have loved to just be able to sit down in the beginning of this game and say like, okay, I have these personal resources, I have this budget, I can just like work like a regular company, and then I sit down and I make a plan and I write my game design document, and then we just do this. But I really had to like make it all up, or not only me, but like everybody involved really had to make it up as we went along. Basically, new people joined the team. Sometimes people left the team. We always had to work under like difficult situation, like difficult conditions, you know, that you probably don't have as a regular developer. We had to improvise a lot. Yeah, it's a bit of a special situation. We are not, we're a bit of a special company. But yeah, we are a company, and we definitely also want to make profit. Like this game, we will sell, and we want it to be profitable because we want to also be able to make a living of it and make more and bigger games in the future. And you need money for that.
Absolutely. For free. No. Absolutely. I mean, this is a thing that I think a lot of people on our side really need to understand this, that it's not a crime to make a living from something. Yeah. And because it also means that you can then keep doing that thing and do it bigger and better in the future. That's the whole point of being self-sufficient. And the left understood this, they've always understood this, they've never had qualms about making money, making a profit from what they do, even though their own principles would seem to be against that. They don't care because they know that it works. And I think that this is something that we shouldn't be ashamed of making a living from this. It's a thing because a lot of people are nervous about asking for donations, and it is an awkward thing to do. And I've very rarely asked for donations on Millennial, but it is on screen. And I know it is a bit awkward, but as you say, if we are able to live off this, whatever the work is, then we can continue it. Otherwise, we have to have full-time jobs and we have less time for this.
This is absolutely a phenomenon I've seen many times myself. People need to have full-time jobs and to earn their money. And no matter which project they are working on, eventually their full-time jobs, like, they just have to take care of that, and the project will fall apart because they cannot devote enough time and energy to it. And it never works. Nothing ever really comes from it. At least maybe they manage to put out one thing, but then the project dies again because people just can't keep it up. So you need to be able to earn money to make a living of it, to be able to quit your day job and just do that. And if people don't understand that or are envious or think like you are not, if you're a right winger, you have to live in poverty and be homeless or something, I don't know, then I don't know what to tell them. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not being realistic.
Yeah, exactly.
But the other thing that you wanted to talk about, and this really flows naturally from both games, is the matter of art and propaganda, because this is another thing where I think a lot of people have a certain idea that, I have my own perspective on this. What is your perspective on this, the matter of art and propaganda?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, okay, that's a bit of a complex topic. Generally speaking, I think the more something it is propaganda, the worse it becomes as art, even though there is really good propaganda out there that is very artistic. Like, that's not a complete contradiction, but usually it is. And I have seen many projects where the whole thought process went something like, we need to make a right-wing X music, comic, whatever, I don't know, video game. And so they just like went there with the idea to do something that is ideological in the first place. And then they tailor whatever medium they have to somehow fit that. And often the people doing that, not always, but often the people doing that are not even particularly passionate about the medium or the specific art form they use. And it shows, because I have often seen it that like the end result is we do something that the leftist mainstream also does, but worse, but you have to like it because it's right wing. Kind of like that. And
yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know what I mean. And I think the better way to approach this is like you need people who are passionate about something, who want to create, who have an intrinsic desire to create, and a talent, of course. And if they have a certain worldview, this worldview will influence the art they make eventually. That's a bit of a more subtle approach. And I have noticed that like political activists, there's like the politically activist mindset and there's the artist mindset. And sometimes that's contradictory. Like the political activists are very impatient in a way. They are like, you know, the great replacement is real. We are going to like perish. It's all going down the drain. We need to do something now. You know, and the artist, you know, like, so you have to like supercharge your art with as much ideology as you can, because we have no time. But you have to let go a little bit in order to create art. You can't do it like this. It's too, it doesn't work that way, really. And
yeah.
I am a bit guilty of that myself, because obviously Heimat Defender is a very ideological game that is also, in a way, propaganda. Like, I mean, obviously. But because that was the whole point of the whole thing, and also the people funding it wanted it like that. I mean, I'm not saying like I'm blaming them for it or something. It totally made sense and it worked because it worked. But still, I love making video games. It's something I just do. I would have made a video game anyway. It would have been a different one probably, but I would have, because it's just what I do. So, I think you can see that, like, I have an actual passion for these retro games and all that stuff. So it's not definitely pure. Yeah, I mean,
I think it definitely comes across. That, huh? Yeah, and you know, and that makes it much easier to like, you know, it's like, why would I not feel affection for this? And I did. I genuinely got very excited about it. Even though I didn't play it, I thought, oh, this is lovely. This is something beautiful. This is something good. This is something worthy. And that came, and you know, that's, I guess, your interest in it, your passion for it coming across and being sort of infectious. And that's what you want. I mean, who the hell would want a game that was just political propaganda and there was no love in it? Who would want a film like that? Who would want a TV show like that? Who would want a song like that?
It's like you can also see like when left-wing propaganda gets infused into media too blatantly, then everybody also just makes fun of it and it doesn't work. I've just recently seen like there has been this clip from some weird BBC show making the rounds over the last day about like incels, where you have like these guys writing some stuff. Have you seen that?
I think I have seen it.
He writes some stuff about how he's sitting on the sofa and he writes like something about like dark web search, incel black pill ideology, and then he searches on it. It's completely like, it's stupid and everybody just makes fun of it. Yes. So yeah, it never works.
Yeah. And you know, that really is it condemns the people who made it, because it shows that they really aren't interested in the topic. They're not trying to get to know what actually is the problem of incels. What actually is the, why are people black-pilled? Why are young men feeling disenfranchised and hopeless? No, their approach is simply to demonize this.
It would be a better propaganda if you were actually like smart. And back in the day, I think actually leftists were, they were just better at this, or the mainstream was just better at this. They put more effort into it. Like if you actually portrayed the black-pilled guy, the incel guy, as a somewhat sympathetic character that you could sort of relate to, but then he just goes into the wrong direction and you have to admit as like the viewer that, nah, okay, this is not okay what he does or something. But they don't even try anymore. It's just, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen this on, because my own thing is TV drama, more than film and more than video games. And you see this there. In the 80s and the 70s, yeah, there was a political thing in a lot of TV dramas. But they never forgot that they were storytelling. That's the business that they were in. The thing that they were doing was telling stories. And that means good characters, interesting plot lines, and themes, and not over like knocking people over the head with the political messaging. That's the 70s. And even when they've got a character, like, I remember there's a, like, for example, there's a Doctor Who story from 1988, and there's a racist character in it. And he's supposed to be a Mosleyite, he's a fascist. But he's a nice guy. And he's actually presented in the program as a nice guy. But you are supposed to condemn him because he's got bad ideas. But he's actually presented as a very sympathetic character. It's amazing, because that's 1988. In 2014, 15, they had an episode with a guy who was clearly not even racist, not even fascist, but just right wing. And he was presented as complete, even though he actually turned out to be correct about the in the storyline, you were still supposed to condemn him. And he was presented as a completely unpleasant man. There were no redeeming attributes to his personality. And as I say, it turns out that at the end of the storyline, if the other characters had actually listened to him, they would still be alive at the end of the story. But it doesn't matter. Because he's right wing, he's a very bad person. Simple as that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's to just contrast like that with 1988 is just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It has gone so much down the quality of the propaganda, of the left wing propaganda. Even I remember somebody wrote in the comments. He asked if I know American Krogan. I actually was on a stream with American Krogan. I think he's a pretty great guy and he does amazing stuff about video games. But he also had this program about this movie called A Time to Kill. I think he was on like Guide to Culture or something. Yeah, I think it was on Guide to Culture. And this movie, Time to Kill, I don't know, do you know it?
It's, I did, and I saw the stream, and I
yeah, yeah, it was brilliant, because I remember I saw that movie when I was a kid. I totally forgot about it, but when I saw that stream, I remembered I saw that movie as a kid. And a kid growing up in Austria, never seen a black person in my life. I was just like, yeah, that's probably how it is in America. You know, I just swallowed it because it was made so well. Like it was objectively made well. It had a good cast, good actors. Yeah, and they just really don't make them like they used to, you know.
No, and that's an excellent stream, by the way, that people should watch.
I recommend it to everyone. It's very enlightening.
I linked it on my Telegram a couple of months ago. I don't know if I can find the link for it just now, but I will look. The issue there was that hold on a second, I'll see if I can find this. I would like to show people that. But the issue there was that Frode and American Krogan went through this film exhaustively. I think the stream is about 3 hours long. And they showed how clever the filmmakers were about the propaganda. Like, for example, they made the main character who he's a liberal, and he's supposed to be open-minded and all that, and yet he's pro the death penalty. He's not a total liberal. He's not going to alienate the audience by being airy fairy. Progress.
Yeah, they really tried to understand their audience and how they could bring everyone on board, even the ones that are maybe a little bit more conservative leaning or a bit more like grounded or something. So yeah, it was, they thought this through really, and it's compared to that, like modern day leftist propaganda is just like so dumb and so blatant, and it's just like, did you dislike this person because he's evil? And
yeah,
that's
find
it.
The stream.
Because he's evil, you know. That's
exactly. It's basically just telling you, don't like this person, and therefore don't give his ideas.
It's the exact opposite of show don't tell. It's just tell. You know?
Yeah, tell don't show.
Just tell. Tell and believe.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and it's ironic. It's kind of strange because the left knew how to do this correctly. They knew how to do this well and very, cunningly. Up until about, 10, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I would say. And then they just went turbo. And now their stuff is...
I'm not sure. I mean, maybe they have become complacent. I'm not even entirely sure why this is happening.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's degrading, yeah. Well, maybe it's just like a sort of degeneration, you know, like every generation that comes just has to try less hard than the one before them. So they just get worse and worse over time. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be complacency or it could be some sort of desperation. I really have no idea. It's a baffling thing because, as I say, they had the recipe and then they just threw it away.
But to get back to the original topic, like maybe we can learn from that and be the ones who do it like well now from now on. So I actually advise all people on the right who do metapolitical cultural stuff to try and learn from that, you know, even things that you maybe despise on an ideological level. But as you said, they had the recipe, they knew how to do it. And about the art and propaganda aspect, I think there is some kind of agenda or worldview baked into every work of art almost. I don't think it's a bad thing. But it has to be a good piece of art first and foremost, and it has to be a good story, it has to be a good video game, it has to be good music. John Lennon, whom I absolutely cannot stand and whose song Imagine I hate, was nonetheless objectively a good songwriter, and that's why it worked. I mean, I have to admit that, sadly. So yeah, that's, I think, the basic message I want to get across about this whole topic, propaganda versus art. And yeah, you just have to be a bit patient as the artist to let your message like do its work maybe a bit in a more subtle way.
Yeah, I think you and I are in complete agreement about this matter. It is a fairly complex, it's a subtle matter, because it's natural that you want to influence the world. I think everyone does, especially if they feel strongly about things. But at the same time, you've got to hold that back, because otherwise, as an artist, as a propagandist, as a political activist, you can just go straight for it. But as an artist, if you do that, you will end up creating bad art. I mean, I just cannot think of anything where it's still good, even though it's hitting you over the head with a message. It just doesn't happen.
I can't think of something like that now.
No. I mean, I don't know. You can watch something and you know what the perspective of the writer is. That's fine. You know, and that's the other thing. See, right-wingers, like mainstream right-wingers, will go the other direction and they'll say, I just want something that's entertaining. I don't want messages. But then that's how the left were able to take over the culture.
That is, of course, also a complete naive thing. And that's also, yeah, that's the whole, like, I'm not sure, like, centrist attitude or whatever the best word is for that. These are the people that always lose, and these are also the people who never understood the medium or the art they actually want to be entertained by, because they really think that what they have always been consuming is just entertainment without any message, then they just haven't been paying attention. You will find all kinds of propaganda or worldviews or agendas or deeper messages in anything, be it from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Like, people think, Al Bundy or so was like completely apolitical, just pure entertainment. Haha, he was so funny because he made jokes about women or whatever. But it's actually full of deeply subversive messages about, like, I don't know, family life and blue collar existence and so on. So these people just have never paid attention.
Yes, exactly. They simply don't know what they're talking about. It's embarrassing, actually. There we go. I mean, this is how the left have taken over the culture and subverted.
They have understood that, and we should acknowledge that and not be like, hoo-hoo, leftists are all like so stupid, and look at those crazy people. Well, these crazy people are now in power, you know.
Yeah, exactly. This is and that gets to the whole thing about the left can't meme. That's true in a way today, in a way, but historically, for a long time, they've been very, very, very good at memeing, just in a different way that from ours.
I mean, they have. Yeah, it's true. They have backed themselves in a corner where they can't face realities anymore. So they have lost that ability, and it's the right now who can, like, just straight up say it how it is. So now we have the advantage, and that's why the left can't meme. But yeah, as you said correctly, they made a lot of really good memes back in the day. I'm afraid.
Yes, indeed. Unfortunately. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up there. Unless there's anything else you'd want to say about that.
I just wanted to say, like, about the Great Rebellion. To sum that up, it will be more of a game that just is supposed to be a good game. And in the best case, if we can make it, should also be able to be just played as a game. And if you are not interested in the political stuff, you can kind of just ignore that and it will still be fun. That's kind of what we're aiming at. So we will definitely, there will be lots of political messaging in it, like, don't worry, but it will be more subtle and it will be less over your head. So I hope people like that. I hope people are not disappointed and will be like, I mean, there will probably be a few that are like, we like the more direct style of the original game better. We will see. But that's going to be our new game. There is no release date yet because of reasons. The release will be a bit delayed. Yeah, I will talk about that on my social media channel. But whatever, we will finish it, and yeah, you can buy it on our website, because I'm sure Steam will kick us again. So
that's the thing. I mean, somebody was asking if you're doing anything to make that less likely, but the thing is, they already know who you are, so unless
I think that ship has sailed. I mean, we will probably try. I'm not sure if we will even try. I'm not even particularly motivated. I think we will just try to sell it over our own channels. And it's going to be more difficult because we don't have the exposure you have on a platform like Steam. But we will have to rely on our contacts with influencers, people who have big Telegram channels. If they want to help us, they can share our game. And that's how we hope that we can make some actual revenue and then keep on making games, because that's what we want to do. And we have a team of talented people. I hope it will still grow. These people also all have to be paid. It's not going to be easy, but we'll try.
Yeah. And as I said earlier, this is how we build a culture of our own. It's how we build a subculture of our own. And it has to be self-sustaining. It has to be, it has to continue. So yeah, I wish you the absolute best of luck with that. A final question: how can people help, and can people get involved if they want to? I know that there's at least one video game programmer in the live chat.
Oh, I see. I haven't done. I have to read through the chat then later. Yeah, they can get in contact with us. They can just write to us. The easiest way is probably to just write to us on our email, cultgames@protonmail.com. Obviously, they should follow us on our Telegram channels. We're also on Gab and on Twitter. Let's see for how long. We are looking for people also, not only programmers. For instance, we could really use someone to help us with social media. I just always kind of like do all social media stuff like on the side whenever I have time for it. And of course, that's suboptimal. We can really use graphics artists, anything. We currently will probably not be able to pay you much, I'm afraid. I really hope when this game is done and we make a profit of it, that this will change. We do not want people to work for free forever because, as I said, that's unsustainable. But if you want to get involved, just hit us up.
Okay, excellent. I hope that people do. As I said, I think this is something special. I think that Cult Games is something special, frankly. And so I hope that it does continue.
Oh, and one thing I want to say before we finish, sorry to interrupt you. Sorry, no, I just want to say, like, I mean, it just happens that, as I said, I'm making video games, but I really want to encourage everyone who has any kind of talent, be it doing comics or music or whatever, to just do that, like go for it. And you maybe have to be a bit like do some scary stuff if you want to go all in, because maybe you won't have a regular career or whatever. But the leftists did that too. Like, there was a time when they actually didn't have any like safe jobs or something. They also risked their career for their art, and that's also, I think, something we have to just kind of do. I don't want people to be poor or something, but it's just not gonna. You can't have everything. You can't have a career and be like this avant-garde right-wing artists and everything. You know, it's gonna be a bit unsafe and uncomfortable from time to time, but it's worth it, I think. Yeah, that's just what I want to say.
Yeah, that's a nice message, a nice sentiment, and I hope you're right. And well, I hope that people can manage this. As we know, the powers that be try to make it difficult, as difficult,
it's difficult
as possible.
Yeah. But I'm not blaming anyone for not doing it. I mean, I get it. You know, it's hard, but. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess the answer to that is you want a meaningful life. You want to have done something that, and made a mark. So you know, it's not going to be easy, but we hope that it's worth it. We hope that we make some difference in the world. Okay. Well, Roland from Cult Games, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial.
Thank you for having me. It was really nice, and yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe doing that again.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll be back in 50 minutes with the Fergan. I'll see you then. But in the meantime, bye-bye for now.
Bye.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Get the info you need at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation today. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.